can move that over when I close my mouth. All right. So, like we said, like if you could just introduce yourself, like, hi, my name is, and then say your rank and what platoon you're in and stuff.
Currently, or when I deployed.
When you deployed, and then be, and then now, and then but now I am. So like when I deployed to wherever.
Okay. This now.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Hi, my name is Michaela Steiner, and I deployed with Echo Company of the 145th, attached to the 163rd Infantry Battalion out of Helena. And I was a specialist when I deployed to Iraq. And now I am in training center in Helena as a sergeant.
Nice. Okay, so just a little bit, few basics about your background, like where were you born, what were your parents' names, things like that.
Well, I was born in Bellingham, Washington, but I grew up in Belt, Montana, a little small town outside of Great Falls. My mom is a paramedic, and she's also the manager for Urgent Care Plus in Helena. And my dad is one of the teachers at the Law Enforcement Academy in Helena.
So do you have any, like, brothers or sisters or anything like that?
Yes. I have one younger brother who is definitely taller than I am now. I can say younger, but I can't say smaller.
That's funny. So what are, like, what was it like growing up? So your dad was in law enforcement. My dad was in law enforcement. So you just kind of, you hear different things. Like, you hear stories and you hear, like, crazy stuff all the time. So what was that like growing up for you?
It was definitely interesting because you would get to hear, like, my mom's side of the story because she was a paramedic in Great Falls for a really long time. So you'd get to hear, like, all the really interesting, gory stories about, like, car accidents or people burning up in airplanes. And then, like, my dad, you'd be like, well, yeah, I arrested this guy today. That's about it. My mom's stories were always much more interesting.
That's funny. So what were you doing before you entered the service? Is this something that you always wanted to do, or, you know, did you want to be like a doctor or like a flight attendant or something?
Well, when I was in high school, I was trying to figure out ways that I could pay for college because I still want to be a teacher, a college or a high school science teacher. So I was trying to figure out ways to pay for it. And my brother had been talking about joining the military for a really long time. And I kind of was starting to look into it. And a couple of my other friends had joined the National Guard. And so I started to read about it. And one day at the dinner table, I was like, hey, Mom and Dad, I want to join the Army. They're like, oh, okay. So my dad sat down with me and was like, okay, seriously, you want to do this? And I said, yes. And he said, okay, we'll go around and talk to every recruiter possible to see what we can get you the best deal for. So he went in and talked personally. Like, I had to sit outside the room for, like, half an hour while he talked to all of these different recruiters, like with the Navy and the Air Force and the National Guard, and get the down low of what's really happening, because he understood all of this stuff way more than I could ever. So he sat down and talked with all of them and decided, yeah, the National Guard is definitely the place for you to go.
You're his baby girl. Of course he's looking out for you. Mm-hmm. So did any of your other family members, were they in the military, or are you the first one?
Well, actually, my dad is in the Army Reserves. He's the command sergeant major for a bunch of the states in the reserves. And he just got back from his second deployment in Afghanistan. And my brother is also in the Army National Guard. He's a tanker in Great Falls. And my grandpa was in the Air Force, and a bunch of my great uncles kind of, like, dabbled in when they had to join the service, you know, when they had the draft. So a bunch of them went in, but they never stayed. My dad, I think, is the longest one. Oh, and his brother. His brother was in the Army, too, for a while.
So your brother is still in, he's still deployed right now?
No, my brother is drilling here in Helena. Not here in Helena, but in Helena. And he is going to school to become a firefighter right now, so he's not deployed yet.
But he will be?
Possibly. Like, the deployment rate for units is about every 6 years, so he was in the same battalion that I was in when I deployed, so he just missed the deployment because he was too young to go. So everybody kind of came back, and he was in the rear deck when everybody deployed, so he kind of hung out here in the States, and since we just got back in 2011, they won't be deploying for a while.
And since he's your little brother, is there a sense of just, like, protectiveness over him, like not wanting him to go or looking out for him?
Well, He is a tanker, so he's in this big, huge, giant metal thing that you could pretty much throw a rocket at and it would be fine. So I'm not really too worried about him there, but there's a lot of pressure and being away from home, and that can kind of like break somebody down if they're not really ready for it. So I always kind of look out for him, especially when people try and make fun of him because his sister's deployed and he hasn't. That's a big deal for the infantry people. But yeah, I always look out for him.
That's nice. Okay, so now we're going to just kind of transition into your early days of service. So can you talk about a little bit your surroundings? Like, what was it like for training camp? So where did you go and train, and what was that like?
Well, for my basic training, I went to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, and they call it Fort Lost in the Woods for a reason. There are rolling hills of trees, and it's just you're in the middle of nowhere, and if you were doing, like, land nav, it's very, very easy for you to get lost because they're all back dirt roads and there's nothing around you. When I first got there, we had reception, and you kind of get shuffled through all these lines, and you have to stay there for a week while you get shots. You have to go through medical, you have to go through dental, you have paperwork you have to fill out, you have to do, like, your will, you have to do all this kind of crazy stuff before you can even start basic training. So it was really interesting having to be yelled at and not even know why I was being yelled at for. Like, we haven't even started yet and you're yelling at me. What's going on? So yeah, you just kind of do as you're told, and then you eventually get into basic training. And I got to do, like, a male and female basic training. So we were kind of mixed in with a bunch of different people. It was not just the National Guard. It was active duty. So we were all just kind of just thrown into this huge company. And there were four kind of, I guess, four groups of us. And there were 60 people in each group, so that's how many people we had in our company. And the first day that we got there, we're on these buses, and the drill sergeants are like, okay, now, we don't want you to hurt yourselves on the first day. We want you to just kind of gingerly, you know, nice and slow, don't hurt yourself, walk over to your placement, drop your bags, and get in a formation. Me and my friend Kelsey, who had gotten to go together, we were both from Montana, so we kind of like buddy teamed it up, and we're like, okay. So we sat next to each other, and we were like, no, this isn't true. He's lying. Like, we could see this coming. We'd seen movies before. We'd heard stories. No, you get to be yelled at and berated and, like, totally tortured your first 2 weeks that you're there. So we're like, no, they're not going to make us walk. So we get out, and sure enough, there's all these drill sergeants huddled around all the buses yelling and screaming at you, like, run, get over there, private, let's go, let's go. And we're like, oh, yeah, yeah, okay. So we went and we ran and we did all this kind of stuff, and they were making us do PT, like dropping these big, huge 50-pound duffel bags, lifting them up over your head and dropping them. So, like, they were making us sweat. And then the two drill sergeants that were on the bus and told us to walk came over and started yelling at us because they told us to walk and we didn't listen to them. So it was just total chaos. And that's pretty much how the entire basic training went, because it's about 9.5 to 10 weeks long. That's pretty much what it was the entire time. But their thing is they have to build you down, like totally break you down, and then build you back up again to be like a soldier and have like certain values. And there's lots of kids that come in and they don't have any of that with them. So they're like, oh yeah, I'm a badass, I'm really cool. And when they get there, they find out they're not. So it's kind of like building up a team, because you go through all this bad stuff together, like being smoked or like having to do all these drills and like staying up until 4 o'clock in the morning and then having to get up at 6 to do the next stuff the next day. So you just kind of build like this group. You've been through so much together, and so it like builds a good cohesion. So that was really cool. And I don't think I would ever go back there, but I would definitely like to do all the training again. I could do the training, but not the yelling and the all that kind of stuff, because it's crazy.
Now, on your, like, on your ride to training camp, what was going through your head? Were you nervous, excited, just kind of, like, what were you going through?
Well, we had been in reception for a week, so I was like, really, okay, come on, we just got to get this going, because I got to get this 9.5 weeks over with so that I can go to my AIT, where my advanced training's at, and then I can go home, right? I just have to think, okay, timeline, got to get this done. So Kelsey and I were both like, okay, we just need to do this and get this over with. There's always those little butterflies that are in your stomach because you don't know exactly what's coming at you, but you kind of have an idea, so you can work yourself up or totally be oblivious to what's going to happen next. But I think Kelsey and I worked ourselves up a lot. So there were all those butterflies flying around, and we're like, okay, we got this. Because you're sitting in this bus seat next to, like, a bunch of people, and you're stuffed because you've got duffel bags on the front, bags on the side. There's stuff everywhere all over this bus. And it's really intimidating having, like, these drill sergeants who you know they're going to be your mortal enemy, and they're telling you all of these things, and you're just like, okay, we can do it. So you just kind of like have to make sure you stay calm, and that's something that Kelsey and I really tried to do.
That's funny. So what is the reason you chose this particular military branch that you did? Was it because of your dad and he you know, picked the best one, like, for you, or was it something that you were interested? So what was that about?
Originally, I had said the National Guard because my friend CJ, her dad is a recruiter for the Army National Guard. So he had kind of come to the school and talked to us about our benefits, like tuition assistance and basic housing allowances and all this kind of stuff that you would get while you go to college. So I figured that that would be a good plan. So I talked to my dad, and after he did all of the roundabouts for all the recruiters, he agreed with me and said that that was the best one.
Okay, so you were talking about specialized training. So what specialized training did you do, and where did you go for that, and why did you do that?
So after my basic training, I went to Fort Lee, Virginia to become an automated logistical specialist, which is just a fancy name for computer person for maintenance shops. So I had to go there with a bunch of other new people and be in an entirely new company with new instructors, and it was more like a classroom setting this time. You would go, you would have class in the morning, and then you would have drills or something militarily training-wise in the afternoon. So that was really cool. And it wasn't like they were yelling at you and trying to beat you down, because that had already happened to you at basic training. So they treated you more like you were already in the service. So you got to have weekends off. You got to actually sleep. That was nice. It was really cool. I got to be the student first for my company. So that meant I got to be in charge of everyone. And I say in charge very loosely, because if I ever wanted to, like, smoke them or yell at them, I had to do whatever punishment I was going to give to them, because I was still, like, one of them. I was just kind of a little bit higher. Yeah, it was fun.
So this is, like, a huge life change. Like, so much stuff is happening. So how would you describe that? Like, what happened to life as you knew it? And, like, how did you prepare for that? Or could you ever prepare for that?
One of the really cool things that the Montana Army National Guard has is they have, like, a pre-basic training, pre-training drill weekends where you can go and learn the things that you'll need to learn ahead of time, so that when you get to basic, it's not totally rushing and you freak out, because you'll know all the knowledge that you'll need, like Army values or the Soldier's Creed, stuff that would take people a little while to memorize. We had time because they aptly prepared us to go. So that was really nice. And then after I went through all this training, I was still in Army mode, because once you get in Army mode, you want to go as far as you can and stay with it. I wanted to go airborne. There's all this kind of crazy extra training that I wanted to do. But as soon as I got back, I kind of, like, had to switch from total Army mode to college life. And that was really interesting, because I had missed the first semester because my AIT ran into the first fall semester that I would have gone to in 2010. So I had to wait until the spring of 2011 to start school. So I kind of get a job and wait. And then finally, when I got to do it, I only had one semester because I found out we were going to deploy. So I kind of got into the school mode. It was really fun. I took some great classes. And then all of a sudden, I had to start preparing for deployment, which was definitely back in Army mode. So it's kind of like a flip. You have one side where you're in the Army and one side where you're a civilian. And it's definitely very different.
How did you flip like that? Like, how, I mean, was it, like, when you got the news, were you just like, holy crap, like, I'm getting deployed, you know? Like, what was that like?
Originally, in my contract, it said that I had a 2-year waiver so that, because it was for school, like, I had gotten so many benefits for school that they wanted me to do school first. So I got a waiver saying for the first 2 years of my contract, I was non-deployable, which I was fine with. And then as people were talking about it, all the people in my company and my battalion were talking about the deployment, I kind of, like, came to the realization that I needed to go with them. So while we were doing some contracting paperwork for the deployment or like signing whether you were going or not, I decided that I wanted to waive that part of my contract and go with them. So I was able to sit there and actually think about it for a long time. It wasn't you're going, it's well, they're going and you could go with them if you want to. So that night that I was actually going to like go do it the next day, I actually talked to my dad on the phone and I was like, Dad, should I do this? I was really nervous, and because it's a really, really big step going from just being in the States and all the way to like a war zone. So I sat, I was like talking with my dad, and I'm like, Dad, what do you think? And he's like, well, you're an adult. I will support whatever you do. It'd be a great opportunity for you, you know. So he was kind of being like that mentor that I needed and that good side of my conscience, telling me the good things that I needed to know and even the bad things. And he said, okay, well, whatever you decide. So the next day I went and I waived that part of my contract.
So you guys got deployed. So where did you guys get deployed? And what was the energy like when you guys were like on the plane, and what kind of plane did you go over on, and things like that?
So for the deployment, there were a lot of things that we had to do kind of like leading up to it. We had to do the training here, and then we went to Missouri, and we did some training in Missouri, and then we were finally able to get on a commercial flight from Missouri, and it hopped up to Maine, and then from Maine we went to Kuwait, and then from Kuwait we went into Iraq. So it was a very long, long airplane ride. And they allowed us, for flying over the Atlantic, they let us go on a very big, huge commercial. Like, they had two floors of seating, so it was really big, and it was just for us. So if you were on, like, baggage detail, you got to sit in first class, so it was really quite relaxing. It's kind of like the calm before the storm, where you had to go to Kuwait. And that's, like, your first taste of sand, because you get there, and you have to do more training before you can even go into country where you're going to be stationed. So when all of us got there, we were all just like, okay, we're here. It was kind of like a relief to know that all that training we had done, we could finally do our jobs now.
Definitely. So what was going through your head on your way over? Were you terrified, or was this something that you were ready for, you were prepared for? You're like, this is my job. I'm, you know, I know what I'm going to do. What was going through your head?
I knew that I was physically prepared to do my job, and I knew, so I was mentally prepared. It's just there's still those butterflies when you're making those big steps in life, you know, like even going from high school to college, there's butterflies. But that was a very, very long plane ride. You could sleep, or you could just kind of talk with all the people you were going to go deploy with, but I think there was like a weird stillness in everyone, because we were just kind of starting to get focused and we realized that this isn't a game, this is real. So it was really kind of quiet for everybody once we got closer.
Wow, I can't even imagine that. So what was one of the last things that you said to your parents, and what did they say to you? Like, what was that conversation like?
So before we got on the plane, I had my great aunts there, my great uncles there, my grandma was there, my mom and my dad and my brother and a bunch of like my parents' friends were all there. They were all there to see me off, and it was very emotional for a lot of people other than my family, because we had kind of gone through this before, so we knew it was just a matter of time before I'd come back. The only person that actually cried in front of me was my grandma, and like she had to leave before my plane actually took off, because she was just in tears. But she said that later she saw me from the parking lot take off, so that was good. But it was really kind of humbling and kind of sad to have to say goodbye for an entire year of your life, because you know they're gonna keep doing their jobs, they're gonna keep doing whatever it is they do here without you, so you're gonna miss out on this entire year and what they're going to do things, and you're going to do things that are totally different. You're not going to be able to be like, oh, yeah, remember when we did this? No, you weren't there. So it was really kind of hard to leave. But I remember my mom and my dad, they were both like, okay, we'll see you later. And it wasn't like a goodbye. It was, okay, we'll see you later. So that was really nice, because goodbye is kind of final, whereas see you later is we'll see you soon.
Definitely. So What was base camp like when you got over there to Iraq? So what was that like? Like, was there, you said that you had to do more training. So did you do training in Iraq or did you do it in Kuwait?
So we did MRAP training, which is the vehicle that we were using for our convoys in Kuwait, because that's where they had all the trainers. And so we did IED training and all this kind of crazy stuff you would need immediately in country. So we did it in Kuwait. And then when we finally got to Cobb Adder, which is in Iraq, we were able to just start doing right seat, left seats with the company that we were replacing. So we were able to see what they did. You got to see what your counterpart was doing and the job you would take over from them. So they could give you hints. They could give you helpful tips. They could, you know, be like, oh, yeah, well, you know, you're going to need this on this type of a problem. So it was really quite cool once we got in country to be able to see, oh, yeah, this is what I'm going to be doing. And it was really nice to be able to talk to someone who had done it for so long. So they were able to kind of help you out.
So what was it like? So now you're in wartime, you're in a hostile environment and stuff. So was your surroundings and the people that you were with, like the civilians, was it a hostile environment or did you have to go off and find, you know, find the problems and stuff?
Well, we had kind of been able to be really lucky in the fact that it was towards the end of all the conflicts that are going on in Afghanistan or in Iraq. We were pulling out. So all of the major bombing and fighting and attacking of bases happened when my dad was there, his first deployment. He actually helped set up Cobb Adder, so I was kind of there to help break it down, which I thought was kind of cool. Yeah, it really wasn't so much very hostile on base, but whenever you would have to travel from base to base, that's when things would kind of get a little sketchy. The civilians there were always, like, really nice because they worked on post with us. So you get to talk with them. They would bring you food sometimes. It was really nice to get to know the people that were there, too.
Did you meet anybody that you, like, that just made a lasting impression on you, like one of the civilians or anything like that?
There was this guy who worked on one of the entry points because, so for 1.5 to 2 weeks, we had to totally not go on any missions and we had to do things on post. We had our set, the group of people that I was with, had to do certain details and duties on post. So you kind of like had a rotation of all the groups of people. So when I did that, I spent all of my time at this one entry point to get on to the post, and every day the same guy would come in and he'd like smile and he'd wink at you and he'd like hand you some cookies or like hand you this really good flat pita bread, and he'd just kind of talk to you because they all speak English, whether they pretend to or not, they all speak English. So he was just always really, really nice, and he'd always mention or like say something about what he had done the night before. And it was really nice to kind of get to know him and say, yeah, these are people too. They're not just like the enemy. They're real people.
So what was it like to go to get assigned a mission? Like what went through your head or what was the process of what, you know, getting assigned a mission meant? And, you know, what did you guys go through in preparing for that?
So in order to get set up and to prepare for a mission, you'd first have to get the mission statement from your battalion saying, okay, you are going to go to this FOB or this base on this day. You're going to bring all of these trucks with you, and this is what you're going to need to bring back. So once you finally get that initial, okay, you're going to go, you start getting all of your trucks ready. You get all of your weapons ready. You do battle drills. What's going to happen if this happens? What do we need to do if this happens type deal? So you kind of start preparing yourself for things that are going to happen. And since we did over 45 missions in the year that I was there, we kind of got into a rhythm where you would first have this and then you'd have this training and then you'd go and talk and you'd have like the specifics, like what routes you were going to be taking, because there was a main road called Route Tampa that we went on all the time, and then there were small side roads you could go off of to get to certain bases. So they would tell us the route we were going, what time we would be leaving, what time we needed to start preparing and getting all the trucks ready, and battle drills, like over and over and over again. We talked about battle drills and things like logistical things that you needed to know, like how much food you should bring with you, what the channels are going to be on the radio, like all that kind of stuff. So once you finally get all of that set and you're ready to SP to get going, you're all ready. You're just prepared because you've done all this preparation.
Did you ever have to use the alternate, like the battle plans, like the alternate, like the emergency battle plans that they prepared you for?
Yes, we definitely did. A couple of the times our trucks would get hit with IEDs and we'd have to cordon off the area. We'd have to wait for another group from a different base to come and to look at the area, you know, assess the problem, see if there's any more. You had to make sure that there was no initial threat coming at you and that it was just an IED. You had to do like a medical evacuation. So all that stuff we had prepared for. So as soon as we had to do it in real life, we were good. We just went into mode, didn't even have to think about it. It was muscle memory for us.
Did any of your trucks that you were in get hit with an IED?
Not while I was specifically in the truck, but the truck behind me, because I was in the scout truck for the last half of the year, so I always had to go first through all the checkpoints, through like all the parts of the roads. I always had to go first. So generally what happens is the enemy will see like the first truck and then they'll time it and they'll wait because you know that there's going to be another truck after it. So they just wait and then they'll set off the bomb. So the truck behind me had got hit. And then another time, like the fifth out of the six trucks that we had got hit.
Wow. So since you're, you know, the scout truck and you know that someone behind you got hit, what's your initial reaction? Like, what's the first thing that you would do?
Well, it's really quite nerve-wracking when you hear over the radio, IED, IED, IED. You're like, oh, no. What happened? Who got hit? Like, you need to know all this information so that you can react how you need to. Being in the front means that you have to stop all of the traffic in front of you. So you have this two-lane highway where there's always, like, these trucks pulling trailers and all these people driving. You have to stop them, and you have to say, no, sorry, can't go. Somebody set off an IED, so you guys can't pass. So our job at the front was to make sure that nobody got through. And once you got that set up, then everybody was able to go administer medical or do whatever they needed to do because they didn't worry about all the people coming through.
So this is on, like, a main highway that you guys would get hit with IEDs. So, like, I mean, you come back to Montana and there's no one on a highway. So what was that transition from coming to a place like Montana to that where you're, like, stopping traffic because of an IED?
Well, like in Montana, you have all of these nice highways with great, beautiful mountain views or like a prairie with tons of wildflowers, you know, like that kind of stuff, to flat, rolling desert with lots of sand. And it's not like houses are scattered everywhere. You have a town and then you have like a bigger city like Baghdad. We had to go through Baghdad a couple times. So like if you're at night, then it's not so bad because if it's really, really hot during the daytime, like during the summertime, we did all of our missions at night so that it wouldn't be so hot. And there were only the trucks that would be traveling from city to city, so we really didn't have to worry about those guys too much. So it kind of like worked out hand in hand, I guess, because so the traffic in Iraq is very, very crazy. They don't really have anybody to administer traffic laws. You can drive as fast as you want, as far as you want. You can do whatever the heck you want. So there's all these crazy small people. Like if we ended up going or running into the daytime, or if it was during the wintertime and we were going during the daytime, there were people that would like weave in and out of our convoy, or they would just like speed by. So it's kind of a lot more chaotic and you really have to watch your surroundings because they're not going to pay attention. One time we were parked on the side of the road and this truck came and totally sideswiped one of our vehicles. So we had to pull over, like they had to pull over, we had to talk to them. And that took like an hour out of our mission because he just was going too close to the side of the road. They just kind of do whatever they want, and it's definitely different than in Montana where there's rules.
Now, Baghdad, was Baghdad still hostile when you were there, was it terrifying? Like, was there a certain precautions that you had to make to go through Baghdad?
Baghdad is kind of like any normal city. There's people that are just trying to live their lives and do their own thing, do their jobs, you know, go to work, go home. So there, it wasn't hostile. Like, normally they were just trying to get to work and we were in their way. So they kind of get a little angry with us sometimes, but they just kind of do the road rage thing and then keep going. But it wasn't really all that hostile. And it was actually kind of cool to see at night because they would have these mosques, and there's one really big mosque in Baghdad, and they have it lit up with neon lights. So you can kind of see, like, the beauty, even though during the daytime it's not that attractive to look at.
That's funny. Okay, I'm going to switch it over to Kylie.
Can I stop it?